Good morning. The Torah describes a very tense and high-stakes negotiations in this week's parasha. Klal Yisrael were poised to enter Eretz Yisrael, and to Balak and to the people of Canaan, there was only one man that was able to stand up to them. There was only one hope they had to avoid total annihilation. The Torah describes the conversation between Bilam and Balak, and how Bilam had told Balak, immediately Balak, Maloy Besa Kesef Azov, Lo Yuchu Lavar Espi Hashem Alekai. Bilam made what seems to have been a beautiful statement, that Balak can give him an entire royal treasure house of gold and silver. But Bilam said, I still will be unable to violate the Dvar Hashem. Lasis G'day L'Ketana, I can't do anything against the Dvar Hashem. This pasuk sounds like a beautiful statement. But Chazal read into it a very different interpretation. Rashi says, Lamdeinu shenafshei rechava v'muhammed mamon acherim. Bilam had a nafshei rechava, he was choymed mamon acherim, a very greedy person. And he was, so what he was telling Balak was, Roy loy litainly kol kesef v'zov shaloy. Bilam was telling Balak that I really should be entitled to all of your gold and silver. Why? Because you're about to go to war. Going to war is expensive. You're going to have to raise an army. You're going to have to pay for the army. You're going to have to feed the army. It's going to cost you a fortune. You may win the war. You may lose the war. On the other hand, if you retain my services, I have 100% satisfaction guaranteed. You'll pay me, I'll curse Klal Yisrael, you'll certainly be Matzliach. And therefore, Bilam argued, I am worth your entire treasury. Now, the problem with this is that if you think about it, what would you do if you were Bilam? You have a client. The client desperately needs your services. If he doesn't hire you, his alternative is to raise an army and to pay his entire treasury for an army. It may work, it may not work. You're able to come in smoothly, guaranteed success, you'll do your job, you'll curse Klal Yisrael, he'll win. It sounds like you have a very compelling argument and a very reasonable negotiating position to say, you should pay me as much as you would have paid the army. It seems that Bilam had read up on all of the most current negotiating books, and he seems very, very reasonable. Why should I, if you would have to spend this amount for an army, give it to me and you'll have guaranteed success? On the other hand, Rashi says, Chazal is very clear, that we learn out from this pasuk that it's nafshei rechavo v'chomid mamon acherim. This seems to have been a terrible thing. Where did Bilam go wrong? Now, I'm not sure if we're going to have a chance to actually answer this question, but I think one thing it demonstrates very clearly. We all have a little bit of Bilam in us. Our values when it comes to Chosh Mishpat, when it comes to negotiations, when it comes with dealing with other people's monies, we've obviously been influenced by the Bilams around us. We've obviously absorbed some of their values and some of the culture. And therefore, I think this underscores how important it is that a person is in business, a person is constantly making decisions about Chosh Mishpat, about what's right and what's wrong. It's important to take some amount of time to become familiar, not with Bilam's Hashkafa, but with the Torah's Hashkafa. And to that end, this morning we're going to go through a few common issues and common scenarios and halachos that people perhaps are not so aware of. Let's begin. Story number one. A developer was working on a project. He spent many years putting together a large development, and he patiently, over time, bought parcel after parcel until he had bought up an entire neighborhood. It was a blighted neighborhood. It was run down. And his goal was to redevelop the entire neighborhood, and it promised to be a very lucrative project. Because the area was so run down, the properties were distressed, He picked them all up for a song, very inexpensive. And he was virtually, his work was virtually ready to go, and he was about to start the project. He had one problem. There was one small lot that was located in a crucial area right in the middle of his development. And he had unfortunately, this lot was owned by another Yidola. And this Yid had seen what was going on around him. He had noted that someone was patiently and slowly buying up the entire neighborhood and realized that someone had very big plans. So he refused to sell. The developer sent all sorts of different agents and different people to try to convince him to sell. He absolutely refused. Until one day, the owner approached the developer directly and said, "Listen, I know you're behind this. I know what your plans are. I am not selling. If you want this property, if you want this piece, and I know that you need it, you're going to have to take me in as a partner in the whole project. Otherwise, I'm holding out." The developer was desperate. He had spent years and invested a small fortune into this, and he knew he just couldn't move forward without having this one property. So he finally came up with a brilliant idea. As I mentioned before, this whole area was blighted, it was run down. So what he decided to do is to approach the government, the township committee, and he suggested, he convinced them to seize this property with eminent domain. It was a rundown neighborhood, and he convinced them that it was for the better, it was Tzorchei Tzibur, it was Takanos Arabim, we should seize this property, we'll develop the whole neighborhood, and we'll fix everything up, everyone will be happy. Now he started the process, and then he had second thoughts. He figured maybe I should ask a shiloh, maybe bring in the government, maybe it's Mesira, Arkois, Dina Mahusadini, what are the halachas? Do I have the right to go ahead and use eminent domain and seize the property that belongs to another yid? So he called and asked the Rav at Shiloh, Mutur Asr, Dina Mahusadina, Meiser, what are the halachas? What the Rav told him was that, "I'm glad you called. You've already been over one of the Aseres HaDibros, and if you continue, you're going to be over a second one." So the developer thought, "What is it, a riddle? What are you talking about? Aseres HaDibros, my shayla is Mesira, Dina Machlokes. What does that have to do with the Aseres HaDibros?" The answer is, here's a Mefurash Pasuk. One of the Aseres HaDibros is Loisach Moed Beis Reyacha, Loisach Moed Eishas Reyacha, V'Avdoi V'Amosoi V'Shoyri V'Chamoyri V'Chol Asher L'Reyacha. There is an Isur Doi Reis of Loisach Moed, coveting or being jealous. If someone else has something and you are choymed it, you're jealous of it, and you try to obtain it, that is one of the Aseres HaDibros. Now, it happens to be the last of the Aseres HaDibros. The Eben Shloimeh writes, it's the last one because it is shoko keneged kulam. It is as chomer and as severe keneged all the Aseres HaDibros. But unfortunately, because it's last, somehow it gets lost in the shuffle, and it's something that people are not aware of. So I'd like to spend a few minutes going through the halachas. Interestingly enough, the Isser of Loisach Moed is quoted differently in the first time of the Aseres HaDibros and the second time. In Parashas Yisroi, the pasuk that I read, Loisach Moed Beis Re'echa, Loisach Moed Eches Re'echa, the language used is a language of Loisach Moed. In Parashas Ve'eschanan, it's quoted differently. Here it says, Loisach Moed Eches Re'echa, V'loisisave Beis Re'echa, Sadeu V'avdei V'amosev V'shtori V'chamori V'chol Asher Re'echa. The pasuk uses a different language. And here the language used is Loisisave. Now, there are different explanations of what the parameters of the Yisr is. But I'm going to follow the Shitas of Rambam, which is brought down by the Mechaber in Simen Shin Nun Tes. And the way the Mechaber explains it is as follows. If a person sees something that another person has, and he's claiming it, he's jealous of it, according to the Mechaber, he is not over the Yisr. The Isser of Loisach Moed is in Loisach is only when you see something that someone has, you want it, and you start making plans. How am I going to coerce the person to sell? How am I going to get my hands on it? Once you start making plans on how to get it, that's when you're over the Isra of Loisis Avid. That's simply making plans. You didn't lift a finger, you didn't do anything. The fact that you're claiming it, the fact that you want it, and you're plotting how to get it, that is the Isra of Loisis Avid. If you then go ahead and actually carry out these plans, you successfully pressure the person and force him, convince him to actually sell the goods to you, then you're over second iser of loisachma. Loisachma is when you're successful, when you want it, you convince him and you actually get it. Loisisava is when you want it, you make plans, but you actually haven't obtained it yet. Now in our story, the developer wanted the property. He had hatched this plot with eminent domain to get it. That's the Yisra of Loisis Ava. However, because he had not actually carried it out yet, he was not yet over Loisachmoid. But had he done it, had he actually gotten a hold of the property, that would have been the Yisra of Loisachmoid as well. So what it comes out is that very often, it's good to be a Shlomazel. Because if you make plans and they work, you're over to Yisra, Loisis Ava and Loisachmoid. But if you're a Shlomazel, you made the plans, but it just doesn't work out. You haven't gotten a hold of the property. That is only Loisis Ava, and that's not the Isser of Loisachma. Now, there's an interesting, there are different shitas that I mentioned before about exactly when the parameters of the Isser is. There seems to be a machlokes between some of the Bali Musar and some of the Bali Halacha. There's a famous question that everyone asks, and the truth is, it is interesting, that B'derech Klal, Midos are not mentioned in the Torah. The Tariyag Mitzvahs does not, you know, we know there are many bad Midos that a person can have, whether it's Kas or Gaiva, and yet it's not one of the Mitzvahs. And there's a famous word from Chaim Volozhin that the reason why Midos are not mentioned is that Midos are the Hakdomo, they're the prerequisite, they're the foundation upon which a person is Oisik in Torah and does Mitzvahs, and therefore it's not included in the Tariyag. Loisachmoid seems to be an exception. Loisachmoid is obviously chemdo is a midah ra'ah. And not only is it mentioned in the Torah, it's one of the Atzeres HaDibros. Now furthermore, some of the Bali Musar asked, and Eben Ezra is the first to ask the question, how does it make sense for the Torah to say there's an Isser of Loisachmoid? People are people. You see something that you want, whether it's a particular property, an iPad, whatever it is, human nature is, you see something, you like it, you have chemda, you want it. So the question they ask is, how is a person supposed to expect it to control himself? And how can the Torah put a lav? It's simply by having an emotion you're over an issa. They ask the question, and there are different, the Bali Musar give different answers how it is a person could control himself, a person has to have a bitachon, he has to realize whatever is meant to be here to have, whatever isn't. All sorts of different answers. If you think about it, according to the Mechaber, this kasha doesn't start. Because according to the Mechaber, if you see something that someone else has and you want it, is that loisachma? No. Loisachmoid is when you see it, you want it, you make plans, you figure out how you're going to get it from him, and you actually force him to sell it to you. Even loisisava is you want it, and you start making plans how you're going to get it. The emotion itself, simply wanting it, according to the Rambam, is not the Isser. The Isser is not just the chemda, the Isser is when you take the next step, when you start making plans how you're going to get it. So according to the Rambam, it's very understandable, Loisachmoid, while it certainly comes, the root is certainly from Yemida Ra, but the Isser is not just having chemda, the Isser is going ahead and start figuring out how you're actually going to get it. Now today, loisachmoid is a bit less common than it used to be. For the simple reason that most things that people want, people today have very interesting taivas, whether it's the newest cell phone, but most things that people want are mass-produced. So your friend walks in with the latest gadget, and for some reason you desperately need it. So you don't sit there and try to plot, how can I get my friend to give this to me, how can I buy it from him? You go to the store and buy it yourself. That's not loisachmoid. That's not loisisava. Loisisava is when you see something that your friend has and you want to force him to give it to you. When it's mass-produced and you don't care about his, you'll go down the street, you'll buy another one for yourself, here the Isser will not apply. And therefore today, the practical examples are typically limited to if you're dealing with real estate, where a person may need a specific property, if you're dealing with a collector, whether it's you collect svarim or art, whatever it may be, that's another area where a person may want a specific item and it will have a temptation to be over the Isser of Lo Sachmo. But in general, a mass-produced item which is readily available, it's a bit uncommon for a person to actually be over this Isser. Now the Isser of Lo Sachmo and Lo Sachmo is when you want the item and you start either making plans or taking steps to force the person to either give it to you or sell it to you. The question is, where do you draw the line? If you want something badly, you walk into and it's available for sale. You don't have the money. So you start thinking to yourself, I'll get a job, I'll do this, I'll do that, and I'll put together the cash in order to be able to buy the item. Is that what's happening? No. If the item is available for sale and you want it, so it may not be a good midah, may not be advisable for a person to have this chemda and to have this overpowering urge to get the latest cell phone. But if he does want to do so, and it's available for sale, there's certainly no isser. The isser is only when you go ahead and pressure the owner to sell it against his will. So this leads us to a very sticky question. If there's an item for sale in the store, clearly there's no problem walking into the store and buying it. But what happens if you have your eyes on a particular piece of property? It's not being listed, it's not for sale. Can you go knock on the door and try to convince the person to sell the property to you? At what point do you cross the line? At what point does it change from just a friendly offer to coercion, to loisis ava, and to loisis achma? So while it's hard to give klalim, there are two things that are very clear. The first is, loisachmai has nothing to do, you don't need to pull out a gun and force the person to sell the item to be over loisachmai. Whenever it's hifsuboy and hirba olav rehen, if you nudge him, you ask him again and again and again, or hifsu olav rehen, you send his friends, you send his rov, or you have someone who it's difficult for him to refuse or say no to, whenever you apply pressure and you use that pressure to get him to sell, that is the Isser of Lo Sachmo. Now, as a general rule, the Psalah Chochma Paskins, that you can ask once, you can ask twice if it's available for sale. But once you do more than that, once you ask a third time, now already you're becoming a nudnik, now you're pressuring him, and once you ask three times, you're going to be over the Isser of Lo Sachmo. Now, it's not an ironclad rule. It's possible to be over once or twice if you specifically have someone go over to approach him where you know the owner cannot refuse. He cannot say no to the person because of his relationship, because of his status in the community. But if you send someone and that's the way to pressure him to sell it against his wishes, that will be the Isser of Lo Sachmo. So even though at the end of the day he agrees to sell it to you, even though you pay its fair value, still, you weigh over the Isser, you're paying full value and maybe drabonon, but the Isser of Lo Sachmo will apply. Excuse me? You offer him more. Very good. So the Birchas Peretz asks the following questions. If I go over to someone and ask if he wants to sell his house, so if he says yes, can negotiate, no problem. If he says no, fine. I ask a second time. He says no again. I see he doesn't want to sell. So what I'll do is, I'll offer him $2 million for the house. $2 million, he says, no problem, where do I sign? Is that Lo Sachmo or not? So the Birchas Peretz says, and he's medayik from the Lashon of the Sefer Charedim, and he says this, yes. Because the Isser of Lo Sachmo is not that you're stealing from him. You're not taking a gun and forcing him to sell. The Isser of Lo Sachmo is when you're choymed, you want this thing so badly, you're going to pressure him to sell. Now, some people pressure by being a nudnik. Other people apply pressure by sending over messengers or relatives or people where he can say no. Another way to apply pressure is to make an offer that he can't refuse. And therefore, the Birchus Peretz suggests that by doing that, you'll be over an Issur Lo Zachma. Now, it's a very big Chiddush, and I would suggest it may depend on the type of property. Because like this, if the property in question is an investment property, why do people buy investment properties? They buy it for one reason, to make money. And as soon as the right offer comes along, they're ready to sell. Now, it may not be listed today. The reason why they're not trying to sell it today is they don't believe that they can get enough money to make it worthwhile. They think if they hold on to it, it'll be more profitable. So if you come along and offer them $2 million for the property, that's not Lisachmai. They've been waiting for this offer, or they've been waiting for the right time, and you've just made the time right now. I think that case would be much of a Kulian. Where it gets questionable is if it's not an investment property. The fellow lives there, he's been living there for 20 years, he's very happy with the neighborhood, he likes the neighbors, he likes the shul, he has no intention of moving. When you come, and because you desperately want this property, and you make an offer you can't refuse, okay, for $2 million, we'll find another neighborhood, we'll move to Florida. So in that case, this offer has, quote, has pressured him, again, in a positive way, but you've now pressured him to sell something that he had no interest in selling. And in that is the case, I think, where the Birchus Peretz is talking about, where he suggests that you're right over the issue. Again, it's not so clear the halacha, but it certainly is a shaila. You have to be very careful whenever the Aruch HaShulchan says it this way. He says you should only buy something that's available for sale. Anytime you go ahead and you're knocking on people's doors and you're trying to convince them to sell something which is not listed, you're running into a shaila of Lisachmai. Correct, because the issur of loisachmoid is not stealing. Loisachmoid is always, if you pull out a gun and you steal the property, you have bigger problems than loisachmoid. That is gezel, okay, karka, but that's an issur of gezel. Loisachmoid is always when at the end of the day, the person agrees to sell. At the end of the day, he accepts the money that you're offering, but he did it after being pressured to do it. Having this chemda, having this taiva for this item, and going ahead and applying pressure on an unwilling seller is the Yisr of Loisachmoid and Loisachmoid. So you're right at the end of the day, he loves you. You're his best friend, you're the greatest thing that ever happened to him. But if it took a hirba olav rehim, or if it took pressure to get him to that point, there the Birchus Peretz suggests there's an Yisr of Loisachmoid. That's true. Okay, if the buyer knocks on his door and says, are you willing to sell? And the seller says, you know what? Let me think about it. For the right price, I'm willing to sell. There's no lisachmoid. You're allowed, there's nothing wrong with negotiating. But if the response is no, I am happy here, I don't want to sell. What he's telling you is, I'm not ready to sell it. Now, the same way if you call his rav, grandfather, uncle, whatever it is, and use them to apply pressure. Birchus Peretz says that making a high offer is another way to apply pressure. Okay, that's true. If it is, if you're convinced that it's for sale and he's holding out, no problem. But you have to be convinced. Now again, this Birchus Peretz, he doesn't say it alafa lamaisa. I mean, ma'ir the shayla, if it comes up, you'll speak to your rav, you'll get a psak. But it's not so simple. Well, holding on to a property that you own and not agreeing to sell it is not leisachmoid. He's saying, I am perfectly happy owning this property. I don't have to sell it. If you want it, you're going to have to pay a premium for it. Now, this does sound suspiciously a lot like Bilam. That was his thing. If you want my services, you're going to have to pay through the nose. But the issur of leisachmoid, you're not going to be arguing for because you're telling the person, this is mine, and I'm only going to give it up under these circumstances. It's only when the developer is trying to apply pressure and trying to force him to sell an item that he's not ready to sell, that's where you're going to be over the yisur. What? The end of the story. That's the idea is the halacha, not what happened to the property. Interesting. So there are a few Meir Makoimis that say that it will not apply to a broker. Loisachmoid, especially if the root of the Isser is the chemda, it starts with the fact that you want it. Now, the taiva itself, wanting it, is not the Isser. You have to actually bring it to fruition. But a broker who has no vested interest, he's just doing it to get it for someone else, there are a number of Meir Makoimis that say you will not be over the Isser Loisachmoid. But what you have to be careful with is very often it will be lifneiva. Because like this, say a person decides they want the property. If they knock on the owner's door and pester him and pressure him, they're being over the Yisra of Loisis Ava, they're being over the Yisra of Lois Ava. So they have a very nice agent. They're not going to do the dirty work. That's what real estate agents are for. So they get the agent, they tell the agent, get me this property. Now the agent goes and drives the owner's meshuggah. They're constantly harassing them until the owner says, that's it, it's not worth it, just get me out of here. So who's over the Yisra Loisachmoid? Now the broker is not over Loisachmoid because they don't want it for themselves, and there are a number of Meir Makoimis, there's no Yisra Loisachmoid. So who's over? L'chayra, the person who sent the agent. The question is that B'derech Klal, if you decide you want to bump someone off, you hire a hitman, bump this person off, I'll pay you $10,000. Oh, today it's probably more expensive. But so that you pay the money, the fellow goes ahead and does the deed. So who's the murderer? So over here, again, obviously hiring an assassin is not something that you should be doing. But we cannot call you a ritzeach because there's a rule of ein shliach v'dvar aveira. You cannot say, there's no concept of shlichus. If someone else does an aveira for you, mishaleach is not as if the mishaleach did it. Again, it's usur, but it's not his usur. In this case, when you sent the broker to pester the person, so can you argue ein shliach v'dvar aveira, you're not over the usur loisachmoid? So I don't think so. Because when it comes to loisachmoid, knocking on the door is not the usur. It's not like ritzicha, where it's the maisa usur is shooting the gun. The usur is having that chemda and going ahead, plotting and figuring out a way to pressure him to get the item that you're claiming. You're using the real estate broker as a way to carry out your plot. So in that case, exactly, it's Marble of Rain. So you're doing the Isser of Marble of Rain by sending this person. So while the agent is not violating Lysachmoy, he's playing a role in probably over an Isser of Lifneiver or Mistayeya, depending on the case, and therefore it's something that he should be very careful doing. But to say he's over the Isser of Lysachmoy would not be correct. Now, just to end off, the Mechaber at the end of Simen Shin and Tess, which interestingly enough, the halachos of Loisachmoid are brought, where would you think they would be brought down in Shulchan Aruch? Where would the Rambam bring it down? So, B'derech Klal, when there's an issue that involves bad midos, it would be in Hilchos Deis. In Shulchan Aruch, it probably doesn't belong at all. Where it's brought down the halacha is in Hilchos Gezer. And not only that, the Chinuch Paskins, that a goy that is chayim in mamon acherim, a goy will be over in Yisra Loisachmoid. If a goy wants an item and starts pressuring someone to sell it, he's over in Yisra Loisachmoid. Now this is a pella. Goyim, we know, don't have any chumras, they don't have tarek, they have shavim mitzvahs b'nei noach. Now we may not know all the aseres adibros, but the shavim mitzvahs b'nei noach, I think everyone here knows. And Loisachmoid is not one of them. Zov v'chinuch, Loisachmoid is an anaf of the Isser of Gezer. It's part of Hilchos Gezer. And therefore, the same way a goy is not allowed to steal, a goy is also mitzvah on the Isser of Loisachmoid. And that's why it's talking about the halachos of Loisachmoid in Simen Shin and Tes, which is the Hilchos Gezer. The Mechaber ends off. A person is over loisis ada. If a person wants something so badly that he starts making plans to get it, it's maybe l'dechimur. He will soon come to be over an Isser of Loisachmoid. Vachimud made in Idei Gezel. A person who is over the Isser of Loisachmoid, he wants something so desperately that he's willing to apply pressure and go to great lengths to obtain the item. Eventually, once he does that, he's going to come to be over an Isser of Gezel. Shemoi Ratzah Habayim Limkar. The owners refuse to sell. After he tries making the high offer, he tries sending over all the friends and neighbors, what's he going to do? Lavi de Geza. His next step will be to try to seize the property against the owner's wishes. And if still he tries stealing the property, but he's not successful, the owner doesn't give in so quickly. Eventually, if you're going to go down this route, you're going to come to Shvichas Damim. Say, Lamabi Maisa Acha Vinovus. What the Rambam is telling us, that if you want to know why Loisachmoid is treated so severely, if you want to know why it made it into the Aseret HaDibros, it's because people do not wake up one day and find themselves their murderers. No one wakes up in the morning and say, you know what, today I decided I'm going to be like Al Capone. What happens is, people, they're born, they have a chinuch of a certain sense of yashrus, a certain sense of integrity. What happens is, over time, they'll have nisyonus, a little nisayin here, a little nisayin there. And if a person gives in to the small nisyonus, if a person can't control this, the taiva or the chemda, when he wants something, when he sees something that he wants, if he can't control his actions, what happens is today's wants becomes tomorrow's needs. Once a person gives in, and when he has a chemda, he feels compelled, he'll go to any length to go ahead to convince the seller to sell it. Ultimately, once he goes down that path, when he can't get his way legitimately, he's going to cut corners, he's going to be over Nisr Gezel. And that's why it's treated so severely in halacha. That's why it's one of the Aseret HaDibros, because it's a slippery slope that the Torah wants to make it very clear that a person should not be going along this path whatsoever. Now, going back to the initial question, the developer that had asked the Shaila had no inkling that there was an issue of Loisachmoid. What he wanted to know is, am I allowed to use eminent domain? Am I allowed to use the government to seize the property that belongs to another yid? And his primary question was a question of both Mesira and Dina Malchusadina. Is such an arrangement permitted? Now, Hilchus Mesira, being Moisir Mamon Yisrael Yarakim, is something which has a tremendous chumrah. If you go through the Lashonos of the Rishonim and the Torah that discuss it, it's hair-raising. Klal Yisrael throughout the generations has suffered tremendously at the hands of Moisrim. Governments were all too often eager, any excuse they found, whenever there was any report of anything going on in the Jewish community, they would take it, they would start a pogrom first, ask questions later. And therefore, when there is an internal dispute, bringing in a guy, bringing in a government, or an anos, is something which is person is considered a roidif. And the lashon of the Torah is ein lechelek oyam haba. Now, the word mesira today is bandied about very quickly and very irresponsibly. There are many guidelines to it. It is very difficult to compare a government today that has rules and follows the rule of law to the Cossacks or the governments of yesteryear. But because of the Chaymer HaDavar, because we're dealing with an issue of Ein L'chedek Olam Haba, it's a matter where if a question comes up, the person finds himself in a position where he's forced or he may be jeopardizing another yid, creating criminal liability, it's something which he should speak to in Moir HaHira. It's something which is treated very severely in Halacha, but it is not the type of thing that you give a lecture about and give a shiur to Rabbin. Instead, I'd like to focus on the second part of the question. And that is, conceptually,
Dina de Malchus de Dina. Does Halacha recognize the right that a government may have to seize a person's property because it will be for the greater good, it'll be more convenient, they'll be able to redevelop a particular neighborhood? Now, Dina Malchus de Dina is, whenever you give a shiur on Chayshim Mishpat, whatever the topic is, whether it's a no, mekaptois, it's inevitable at some point during the shiur, it's just a question of time, someone's going to raise their hand and say, it's very nice you're saying the halacha. Dina Malchus de Dina. Under secular law, these are my rights. Who cares about halacha? So the question is, what is Dina Malchus de Dina, and where does it apply? Now, Rav Moshe Sternbach points out that there is the Ma'ar Mekayimus about Dina Malchus de Dina are very confusing. There's very little that's written or that's clearly written, and for good reason. Any Rav that had the chutzpah to write a tshuva about Dina Malchus de Dina, unless his conclusion was very pro-government, probably would not live to see his Sefer published. It was dangerous. This is dangerous work. There were censors, there were governments that were very on top of things. And that's one of the reasons why there's a tremendous confusion. However, what's interesting about Dina Malchus de Dina is it is one of the few concepts in Halacha that there's absolutely no machlokes about. So much so, the Gemara in Bava Kama, Daf Kuf Yud Gimbal, there's a Mishnah that seems to say that you're allowed to cheat on taxes. It's a Mishnah. Please don't leave until you hear the rest of the shir. Now, after the Mishnah says that you're allowed to cheat on taxes, and different Mishnahs that seem to imply that any tax collector, any government that collects taxes is illegitimate, the Gemara says, this cannot be true. V'omer Shmuel Dina de Malchus de Dina. How could the Mishnah say you can cheat on your taxes? Shmuel says, Dina Malchus de Dina, the law of the land is the law. You're not allowed, you have to pay your taxes. Now this Gemara is a bit unusual. Usually, if you have a few Mishnayos that say one thing, and you have Shmuel that says something else, you have a kasha on Shmuel. How could Shmuel say Dina Malchus de Dina? We have a bunch of Mishnayos that seem to say you're allowed to cheat on taxes. That's not what the Gemara says. The Gemara says the other way. How could these Mishnayos be taken at face value that seem to imply you can cheat on taxes? This cannot be true because Shmuel says Dina Malchus de Dina. So the Rosh explains that although Shmuel is the one that said Dina Malchus de Dina, he's the one that articulated it, the concept has no machlokes. Everyone agrees to it. It's a Devar Pashut. There's no dispute about it. Shmuel is simply the one that articulated, that created, that put it in writing. But the klal, the concept, the Dina Malchus de Dina, is undisputed. And that's why the way it's a question, it's a kasha on a Mishnah. How can the Mishnah imply you can cheat on your taxes? That cannot be true, because there's a concept of Dina Malchus de Dina. And what the Gemara answers is, the Gemara says the difference between Kam B'Mechas de Ein Lo Kitzvah, Kam B'Mechas de Yesh Lo Kitzvah. In a nutshell, what that means is, that back then, there were different ways, there were different systems of collecting taxes. Now today we have the IRS, the system's different. If you think about it, if I asked everyone here what their favorite 10 organizations are. So everyone has their own list, their shul, hakel, shuvu, whatever it may be. Not many people have the IRS on their top 10 list. If you think about it, it probably should be. Because if there was no IRS, what was the alternative? How did the kings collect taxes a couple hundred years ago? There's no bureaucracy. The kings had no way of knowing how many citizens they had, who had money, who didn't. There were no tax forms. So what they did is, what they had to do is, they used to sell the tax franchise. Each city or each area, they would sell the right to collect the taxes to the highest bidder. Now, say there were two people bidding for this, the right to collect taxes. One was 5'2", wimp, friendly fellow, goofy smile. And he wants to collect the taxes. His competitor is 6'4", nasty, he's done time for murder a number of times over the years, a real gangster. Who do you think could pay more for the rights to collect taxes? The gangster, because he's going to collect more. He'll be a much more effective tax collector. So So what very often happened is, by a meches and lekitzva, the king cared about one thing. I want the most dollars in my pocket. You, whoever the highest bidder is, we don't do any background checks. We don't care how he's going to collect the taxes. Give me my money. Do what you want. It's all yours. That's a meches and lekitzva. And in such a system where the tax collector was a gangster, he collected whatever he wanted from whoever he wanted. There were no rules, there was no system. That is called the Mechas Dein Lekitzvah. And the Mishnayos that say you can cheat on your taxes is talking about such a system. In contrast, if it's a Mechas Deyesh Lekitzvah, there are rules, there are different tax brackets, everyone, at least theoretically, gets treated the same way. There's no favoritism, unless you have a good lobby. So in such a case where it's a Yesh Lekitzvah, where everyone is treated the same across the board, there, the Shmuel's memra, Vina Machusadina, will apply, and there everyone agrees the taxation is not considered Geneva, and it would be a legitimate debt that the government has the right to collect. Now again, just as a disclaimer, I think it's self-evident that every government has some level of corruption. I'm from New Jersey. That does not make it into a Mechas Dein Lekitzvah. Because by definition, again, there always will be some level of corruption. Ein Lekitzvah means, in the case of the Gemara, you're selling the taxes to a gangster. There's no system. It works by bribery. It works by the tax collector will do whatever he wants. Where it's systemic, where there are no rules, there we will not say Dina Machus Adin. Whenever you're dealing with a government that has set rules, the fact that there always will be some people that break it or get around it is not relevant. The fact that there are rules that by and large are followed, there you will say Dina Machus Adin. So in a typical modern Western country, you'd be very hard-pressed to make an argument that Dina Machus Adin should not apply, and you'd be stuck. On the other hand, someone asked a shaila, had to do with a person who was exporting goods, and you know, he knew my general opinion on the matter, so he wasn't going to do anything dishonest, but he was aware that his counterparty was filling out some forms incorrectly. What emerged was that this other person was dealing with a third world country, which was well known, does not have any, it works completely by bribery, and there are no real system. In such a case, there would probably not be Dina Machus Adin. But any country where there is a system, where there is a taxes are set, there Dina Machus Adin will apply. Now, based on this, we should now close our Shulchan Aruch and say, let's stop learning Chodesh Mishpat. Because for every halacha there is in Chodesh Mishpat, for every halacha the Gemara Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, Bava Basra talks about, there is a civil law that very often will be different. So where do we draw the line? Where do we say we apply halacha? And where do we apply Dina Machus Adin? So there are three basic categories in halacha. The Gemara's case of Dina Machus Adin dealt with taxation. Taxes are for the benefit of the government, and you cannot have a government cannot run without taxes, as the Republicans will eventually learn. Because it is a need of the government, everyone agrees Dina Machus Adin, and if they impose a tax, they have the right to do so, and it has to be paid. The Sefer HaTrumos, and the Shach discusses it in Yerodea, says currencies will be the same thing. A king needs to control his currency. It's a basic function of government. If you undermine that, if you start printing counterfeit money or playing other games with the currency, you're undermining the entire malchus. And therefore, and everyone agrees in such a case, Dina de Malchus Adin. It's where the government has a vested interest, and by not following the rules, you're going to undermine their taxation, their tax base, the currency, you're going to undermine the government. There, clearly, we will not look at what it says in Chodesh Mishpat. You have a responsibility, you live in a country, you're part of society, you have to play by the rules. The second level of rules, and this is a bit more controversial in halacha, is what if there's a law that the government couldn't care less about? It's not taxation, it does not change anything for them. But it's a rule they pass to make things better for people. commerce will work better. Some of the examples that are discussed are rent, something like rent control. The government doesn't really care less. They don't earn less money or more money whether or not you're charging this amount of rent or a higher rent. It's a rule that was passed, L'tovas b'nei ha-medina. It's for the benefit of people. So what happens when these rules conflict with halacha? So here there's a machlokes, the Ramah, and what seems like Roiv Ashkenazi person say, Dina Mafusa will apply. Although it doesn't impact the government, since it is a takana, it is a rule that's made for the benefit of society, in order to facilitate commerce, to protect tenants, whatever it may be, we will say Dina Mafusa Dina. Others argue. The Mechadra seems to reject this. The Shach, also in Siman Ayin Gimel, rejects it in most cases. But again, as a matter of halacha, in most cases, the Ashkenazi poskim seem to follow it. And as long as there is some public interest, most poskim will apply the rule of Dinei Malchus HaDin. However, and the third category of laws, and the one that's probably most relevant, is judicial laws, our ka'is, how the goyim deal with a civil dispute, everyone agrees Dina Malchus HaDin will not apply. The laws, the civil laws that have to do with a private dispute between two parties, it's a private dispute. The government couldn't care less. You're not hurting the government by doing one way or another. You're also not violating public policy. It's not like the government made a rule they want to protect, you know, tenants or whatever it is, and they make rules about it. It's a private matter between two issues, between two Jews. You're dealing with a question of, do we go with Shnei Edim or will we accept a Goy's testimony? You're dealing with questions of how you can be Motzi Mamon. You're dealing with a private matter between two private citizens. Here, we will apply the halachas of Choshen Mishpat, and we will not follow the Chukos HaAkum. As the Rajba writes, if we would not say this, if we would follow the civil law, then essentially we would be mevatel the entire Choshen Mishpat. And therefore, the Rajba concludes is that our kois, whenever it's a private matter between two Jews, we will follow Choshen Mishpat, we will not follow whatever the civil law will be. Especially as Chazon Ish points out that conceptually, if the government makes a law and insists that a Beis Din follows the law, we can go back, we can declare whether or not Dina Malchus HaDin will apply. But today, there's nothing wrong with arbitration. And in fact, the courts very often encourage arbitration. And there is nothing illegal, there's nothing wrong from a civil point of view by agreeing to solve a dispute and by applying the halachas of Choshen Mishpat. Since you have specific permission from the government to do that, everyone would agree Dina Malchus HaDin would not apply. And any private dispute, we would follow the halachas of Choshen Mishpat. Now, very often, I'll hear people will be involved in a dispute, and one of the parties will want to go to court. They don't want to go to Beis Din. Now, right away, there's an issue of our kois. Litigating in court, even if the result will be the same as halacha, litigation itself is the issue of our kois. But what happens very often is the person will say, the reason why I want to go to court is that in court, my lawyer tells me I'm going to win big. I have a great lawsuit, punitive damages, whatever it may be. In Beis Din, I know, based on halacha, I'm not entitled to such a recovery. And that's why I'm not willing to go to Beis Din. Now, you think about it, what's the person saying? The person is saying that I know that according to halacha, I have no claim. I also know I have a way to force him to make this payment, which al pi halacha, he doesn't have to. As far as halacha is concerned, you may as well take a brick, break his window, and steal his silver. Because what you're doing is, you're taking money, you're forcing him to pay money that al pi halacha you're not entitled to. It's a simple case of straightforward gezel. So therefore, besides the issur arkois, besides the actual issur of the litigation itself, if you know that al pi halacha you have no claim in this particular case, then besides the issur arkois, you're going to deal with an issur gezel as well. Now, I'd like to move on to another common scenario in the few moments we have left. It's the beginning of the summer. People very often make all sorts of plans. They may enroll their children in a day camp, swimming lessons, whatever it may be. And as very often happens in the summer, people's plans are fluid. They decide last moment they're going to jet down to Florida, go somewhere, go on vacation, take a trip with the family. And they want to back out from their previous commitment. So what are the halachos of Yechesh and Mishpat? When can you back out of a commitment? When can you change your plans? And when do we say, no, you hired someone, you gave your word, you're locked in? So I'm going to very briefly go, again, we don't have much time, I'm going to just have to go a very, very basic outline, but I'd like to outline the basic issues that you face in these scenarios. If a person starts a job, once a person begins working for you, you send your child to a day camp. Once you start the season, once you've begun the job, the halacha is, you do not need any further kinyan. And even though there was no contract, even though there was no formal kinyan that was made, once you hire someone, you cannot fire them in the middle of the job. If you do change your mind, if you decide you're going up to the country, you no longer need this day camp, and you want to pull your child out, the halacha is, once you started the first day, you're going to be responsible to pay the entire amount, the entire tuition, the entire fee for the whole season, for the whole summer, whatever you enroll them for. The halacha is, every time there's a worker, you do not need a kinyan. Once the job begins, you're locked in. Now, there is one exception, and that is, if the camp is able to replace your child, assuming they have limited slots, they'll only take 25 children in a bunk. Your child is number 25. You pull out and they find the replacement. They can't double dip. They can't charge you and charge the replacement. But in a case where it's too late, at this point they cannot find someone else to fill your slot. And once they started the job, the halacha is, you're going to be responsible to pay the entire amount. Now, in general, when you hire a worker and fire them in the middle, although you have a responsibility to pay the full amount, in general, we make certain adjustments. And that is, the person's supposed to give your child private swimming lessons. So now that you fired him in middle, you have a responsibility to pay him however much you agreed upon to the end of the series. But we have to take into account that he no longer has to work. You're going to pay $200. He was responsible to come and spend this amount of time with your child. Now that you've gone away for the summer, it's true he's lost his job, but he has more time on his hands. And therefore, we cannot force you to pay the full amount. What we will do is, he will get paid kapoil batel. We will have to figure out, if a person is working, and had he done the job, he would be entitled to $300. If you go over to him and tell him, how much money would you accept to go on vacation, not to have to work? So most people will say, listen, if I have to work, I'd make $300. For $150, I'll be very happy to stay at home, do what I want, spend time with the family. So the halacha is, when you back out in the middle, you only pay kapoil batel, you only pay the amount that the person actually is considered to have lost. We subtract, we adjust the amount because, to compensate for the fact that he does not have to work, that life is a little bit easier. Also, if for doing the job he would have had expenses, he had to rent a pool in order to give these swimming lessons. Now that you've backed out, he doesn't need to rent a pool, and let's assume he has the ability to back out. So he's saving money. So that money certainly would be subtracted, since that's not considered a loss. What will come out interesting then is, there's a very big difference between whether it was private swimming lessons or part of a group. Because if there's a group of 10 kids, and either way the instructor has to show up every day and give the same lessons and the same preparation and the same expense, whether there are 10 children or 11 children in the class will not make much of a difference. And therefore, it's likely there will be either no adjustment or a very minimal amount. However, if it's private lessons, and now when you back out, now the instructor can sleep later or can spend more time with the family, then there would be a more significant adjustment because life is much easier for him. So what will be interesting is that if you're part of a group, it really depends how much of a troublemaker your child is. If your child is a terror, and for this instructor to get rid of him, this is a machaya, so then kapoil batel, maybe he'll pay you for pulling out. On the other hand, if he's a well-behaved erlich child, then the instructor gains little by your backing out, then kapoil batel will really be a minimal amount. He'll end up paying virtually the entire amount. That's all once they started the job. What happens if you pull out before they begin? You registered your child in a camp for lessons, and then you changed your mind. So over here, there was no kinyan. Let's assume you haven't paid anything. So in Chayshin Mishpat, there's no way to lock the person in. There's no way to force him to pay. However, there's a concept of Mechusar Amono, when a Yid gives his word, when he makes a commitment, backing out of that commitment is called Mechusar Amono. Ein Ruach HaKol Meidah Himenu, it's certainly not the right thing to do. If a person does back out, you can't force him, you can't have any titles in a bezdin, but it's Nikra Rasha. There are exceptions, again, we're not going to have time to go through all the halachos, but that is primarily what the question is. However, there's one important exception. And that is, what happens if this group, this instructor limited the class size to 5 children. You reserved a slot. Because you reserved this slot, anyone else who pulled afterwards got turned away. Now that the summer begins, you change your mind and you pull out, the instructor is now going to suffer a loss. In such a case, although you haven't started, although there was no kinyan, there's no contract, since you're causing the other person a loss by making this commitment and backing out, you're going to be responsible to pay. Now, this will apply only when you've caused a loss. It means there were limited groups. If this instructor has no limit, whoever registers, they'll take. So then by registering and pulling out, there's no loss. It's only when they have limited slots, they held a slot for you, and they turned away other people. Now, it also will not apply if this instructor is not very popular. There are 10 slots, and you're number 8, and they never filled up. Then clearly, by backing out, you haven't caused the loss. So in such a case, as long as you haven't started yet, there would be no issue. But if you do cause a loss, then you'd be responsible to pay for the hefsek. Now, this applies to a camp. It would also apply to a doctor's appointment. If you make an appointment, and because you make an appointment, they hold a slot for you, and you now cancel the appointment, you back out at a point where the doctor, the professional, whatever it may be, cannot fill the slot. In such a case, you would have the same issue, and I'll be how lawful the doctor can have a claim against you if you cause the loss. Now, I don't know, well, although it's a claim in Chayshin Mishpat, if there are any doctors in the audience, I wouldn't recommend sending a bill to a patient for not showing up to an appointment. It's not a way to build a satisfied and loyal customer base. But as far as a patient is concerned, you have to be very careful that if you back out, if you cancel at a point where you're causing a loss, you will have a prior something I love.